The guru far too often serves as our replacement for real work, since we project upon him or her chattels we are not. We defend the image in all sorts of immature ways, so as not to come to grips with the reality that he or she is just as human as ourselves, even if a far superior specimen of it. Therefore, we opt for the master is perfect, and know all things, and is without blemish, as a way to inflate our own self-worth, even as it sabotages our own efforts to take responsibility for what we must do. In sum, it is easier to project that our guru is God, and defend such tooth and nail, than to take stock of our own limitations, and perhaps his or hers, and then reflect upon how best to progress. I bring this up because recently I was rereading for the umpteenth time a book I loved in my youth, Daryai Lal Kapoor's Call of the Great Master, which is a personal memoir that describes the life and teachings of Sawan Singh, honorifically called the Great Master. Sawan Singh, 1885 to 1948, is a highly esteemed master of Shabda Yoga and had a very large following throughout India and abroad. Having read everything that I could by Sawan Singh that is available in English, I became a deep admirer of him, and I turned to his advice on meditation almost daily. He has some remarkably good suggestions on how to meditate and what to expect. However, many followers of him, and of those who follow his successors, have tended to believe that Sawan Singh was also godlike in his knowledge, and that it extended to science as well. This is not necessarily true, since though Sawan was educated as an engineer, his knowledge of other subjects such as physics or biology was limited. For instance, in attempting to explain his own version of intelligent design and the majestic order of the universe around us, Sawan Singh is quoted as saying the following: "Look at the billions of stars and planets moving in their orbits, never straying an inch from their appointed tracks or colliding with each other. You often hear of railways and steamers, so carefully and ably distracted by your wise engineers, coming into collisions. But did any star ever dash against another? When I was younger, I probably skimmed over this passage and didn't give it a moment's attention, since I was more interested in the narrative flow than in any astronomical predictions. However, I was certainly aghast the other night when I read it again. My first reaction was, what? How could Sawan Singh be so wrong about something so elemental in astrophysics? But then I paused for a second and realized that Sawan said this at a time when knowledge of astronomy was still in its infancy, and that he was not conversant with astrophysics and what it has uncovered. Sawan was mistaken, and that should not be surprising. I see no other way to spin this, and yet I know devotees will be tempted to do so, since the guru must, by his ultimate spiritual attainments, know the inside secrets that us mere mortals are not yet privy to access. This is, of course, silly and completely unnecessary. But does Sawan's limited knowledge about the cosmos at the large and how it operates then disqualify him from providing wise counsel on how to meditate? I think not, since the two spheres of inquiry are quite distinct, if not wholly mutually exclusive. Thus we do a disservice both to our chosen spiritual mentors and ourselves if we think they know more than they actually do.